Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to Drinking the Kool-Aid.
Welcome.
I'm Megs.
I'm Hannah.
And today we're covering a very different story, and there will be no murder.
Wow.
I know.
Okay.
It's still a crime. But yeah, there is not going to be anything of that nature. And it very, very, very loosely ties into our previous story.
Okay, I'm good with that.
So basically, I said one sentence in the last episode that leads into this one.
Okay. So, you know what? It's still a connection. It counts.
It really is. The story we're covering is an infamous poker game that has many layers to it, but it was called Molly's Game.
Okay, I'm very intrigued.
So some of the people that were allegedly involved, and I will be saying allegedly quite a bit here.
Just like that?
Yes.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Okay.
But there are a list of people, and this is not everybody, but we've got some of the main players, and if I say their name incorrectly, sorry about it. But if I say it right, maybe you could congratulate me.
Okay. Wow.
So there you go.
Okay.
Okay. So we have allegedly.
Oh, this is going to get me.
Kenny Tran. He was a professional poker player. Cody Leibel, high-end developer and brother to Blake Leibel from the last story.
I was like, why do I recognize that last name?
Yeah,
that
yeah.
That would explain it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Alex Rodriguez, A-Rod, a professional baseball player. Jeffrey Katzenberg, CEO of DreamWorks Animation.
What?
Mm-hmm. Bob Safai, real estate and poker player. Guy Laliberte, Cirque du Soleil creator and poker player.
Oh, fancy.
Mm-hmm. And I listened to a lot of different YouTube videos to try to say that name, so hopefully that one was right. Alec Gores, technology billionaire. Jamie Gold, World Series poker champ. Todd Phillips, the Hangover director.
Okay.
Nick Cassavetes, the Notebook director. Steve Brill, Mighty Ducks director. Joe Francis, Girls Gone Wild video franchise.
Oh!
Dean Factor, that would be Max Factor Fortune heir. Mary-Kate Olsen made a very, very, very brief appearance in this story. It's mentioned that she arrived at the game with other people, but then got offended by rude comments and left. But I was like, she's still associated, you know?
Okay.
And if you don't know who that is, please watch Full House. That's all I'm going to say.
I'm not. Is there even people, like, that exist that don't know?
Probably.
Who Mary-Kate and Ashley are? Like.
Yeah.
That would be weird.
I know.
I just feel like they're those names that are kind of, like, just known. You know what I mean? People mm-hmm. just know.
Yeah. They're everything. So there you go.
They're everything.
You got it, dude. Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man star. Leonardo DiCaprio, actor known for many films, including Titanic.
You could have... Whatever.
Excuse me. Did you want to use a different one, Hannah?
I mean, a little bit.
Okay. What would you like?
Inception? That's exactly what I was going to say!
Okay. That's fine.
But I think a lot of people probably know him from Wolf of Wall Street, too.
Aha.
But Inception is exactly where I was going. So.
Okay.
I need to watch that. It's been a while.
I love that movie.
It's been a while.
And Ben Affleck, actor best known for Good Will Hunting. So these are the players. Uh-oh, you're thinking of a different one.
No.
Okay.
I was trying not to laugh because I was like, I swear I'm leaving this one alone. Like,
okay.
That probably is, yeah.
I think that's what he's best known for,
yeah.
But there's probably tons since then that are, you know, people are more familiar with. However, these are the people in the story. These are just some of the names that are tied to it. And we're covering this from two separate perspectives.
Oh, intriguing.
So this is going to be very interesting for you. So I used the book Molly's Game by Molly Bloom and Billion Dollar Hollywood Heist by Houston Curtis. We're starting with Molly's version of events first.
Man, this must have been some game.
It really is. Honestly, it's so wild because the way that I found it is when I was working on the case for Blake Leibel on our last one, it mentioned that Cody, his brother, played in Molly's Game. So I was like, well, what is Molly's Game? And then I was like, oh my, we got to cover this. This is really interesting. Molly Bloom grew up in Loveland, Colorado. She attended the University of Colorado at Boulder, where she majored in political science. She was a member of the U.S. ski team and ranked third overall in North America in 1998. Now, one place that most people have heard of is the Viper Room. It's one of the most iconic bars in Los Angeles.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
Okay.
Not that I recall.
Well, you know what? Some of the stuff that we're talking about, you probably will know exactly what I'm talking about, right? Okay. Some of the things we're talking about, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Did I just say that?
Yeah, you did.
Uh-oh.
Sure did.
Yikes. Okay. So it's a nightclub and live music venue located on the Sunset Strip in West Hollywood, California. The location was a grocery store from 1921 to the 1940s. Then it was converted into a nightclub, and it was called the Cotton Club. It went through a series of names, including the Greenwich Village Inn, Rue Angel, The Last Call, The Melody Lounge, Filthy McNasties, which is my favorite, and The Central.
Filthy McNasty.
Yeah.
I would so go there.
I can only imagine what that place was.
I didn't even care. I would go there. I definitely would.
I mean, you'd kind of have to, right?
You have to.
Yeah. It became the Viper Room in 1993 when it was co-owned by Johnny Depp and Sal Janko.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Yeah. They both starred in 21 Jump Street together, and so, you know, then of course having the Viper Room is the natural thing to do afterwards.
So this is probably something that's been like mentioned in movies before, and I just blew right over it.
The Viper Room, yeah.
Okay, for got sure. It.
Over the years, it's been known as a hangout spot for the young Hollywood elite, but it's also known for darker reasons as well. Actor River Phoenix had a fatal drug overdose in 1993. Actor Jason Donovan survived a drug-induced seizure in 1995, and singer Courtney Love survived an overdose in 1995 after Johnny Depp gave her CPR.
Jeez, okay.
So a lot's happened there. In 1997, singer Michael Hutchence played his last public performance in the Viper Room before ending his life a week later. The Viper Room may have been well known, but it was also losing a shit ton of money, and there were suspicions that one or more employees were stealing. Darren Feinstein was planning to make some changes. He brought in Molly Bloom, and he wanted her to get close to the employees, you know, figure out what's going on and start firing them. He needed to figure out how the money or how to get money flowing again and quickly. He told Molly that they would do a poker game at the Viper Room and then she could help run it. It would be super secret, invite only, and you have to bring $10,000 in cash for the first buy-in.
Pocket change.
Yeah, you know, everybody's got that just lying around, right? He gave Molly the names and numbers of some of the most famous and powerful men. She sent out the invites via text, and most of the men responded quickly, like right away. They said, I'm in. The poker game was set up for a Tuesday night, and the first person to show up was Todd Phillips, the writer and director of Old School and the Hangover franchise. Soon, the room was filled. That was
the same person?
Yeah.
That makes so much sense. Like, that freaking checks.
Yeah.
Sorry. I did not know that. Huh.
I'm glad that that's the part that gotcha. Soon the room was filled with movie stars, directors, and powerful businessmen. They all paid their $10,000 buy-in, and they were told that they needed to tip Molly real well if they wanted to be invited back. It was a Tuesday night, and Molly walked out of there with $3,000 in tips. I mean, that's massive, obviously. And this is just her first night. It was a massive success, and most of the players wanted to do it again. So it was decided they would have a poker game every Tuesday night. So, I mean, for Molly, like hell, if she's making close to $3,000 every Tuesday night, that's incredible. For the second game, Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man actor, brought in a $17,000 machine that was called the Shuffle Master. It's supposed to deliver a fair shuffle every time, and he said that he absolutely refused to play without it.
These people be serious about their poker?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's exactly what you're going to see throughout this story. Toby also decided that he was going to rent the machine to them each week.
Okay.
The machine he demanded that they use because he couldn't play without it was going to be rented to them for the poker game for $200. He also said that he would need a list of poker players every week, and he wanted to know in advance if somebody new was going to be joining. So all of a sudden, he's kind of controlling things. The poker game quickly took off and gained the reputation as the best game in Los Angeles. The game was played in a very private room, invitation only, and the people that showed up were either celebrities or very important people. Molly had to turn people down every week, and soon they decided to host games twice a week because it was, you know, so popular. If you didn't get invited, you didn't know where the game was held. If you did know, you weren't supposed to talk about it. So it was really mysterious. It just made it that much more exciting. There were a core group of guys that basically ran the game each week, and they would recruit fish or bad poker players that were supposed to lose. Obviously, it didn't always work out that way, but that was the goal. According to Molly, her boss, Darren Feinstein, was the one that put the whole thing together, and she claimed that his temper was off the charts disgusting, and he ended up firing Molly Bloom because she visited her family for Christmas and wasn't at his every beck and call. She was so upset about being pushed out after everything that she had done to get that job. And I mean, think about that. Like, she got $3,000 her first night in tips.
I'd be pissed too.
Now they're increasing it to twice a week.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money that you're being, like, pushed out of.
So fucking much. Like, that is literally more than I make.
Right.
In a couple of paychecks. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I could see why she'd lose it. And so Molly decided to call one of the poker players, Philip Whitford. She told him what happened, and he did not agree with the way that she was being treated. Philip said that they should move the game to his house and invite all of the players except for Darren. He could talk to the guys and try to convince them that Molly should be the one to officially take over the game. This ended up working. The guys all decided it was hers. It was Molly's game.
Oh, that's where the name came from.
When Darren found out, he called Molly and he demanded that she meet up with him immediately. She was prepared. She knew he would yell at her, make her feel like shit for taking the game that he started. But instead, he said he was proud of her and she deserved it. She had finally earned his respect. Molly went from a young woman struggling to make it, barely getting by on tips and getting screamed at by her boss, to a situation where she was suddenly thrust into the high life. Wearing designer clothes, flying first class, yachting, and hanging out with the celebrities, and she would do whatever it took to make sure that was never taken away from her. Her brain was flooded with ideas. She wanted to truly make the poker game special, make it something that everyone wanted to be part of. Molly set up appointments at 3 luxurious hotels in Los Angeles. She had the staff give her tours, and then she told them she was going to host industry networking events and lots of celebrities would be there. She said she would need to use their best rooms on a weekly basis, and they would need a poker table delivered. With 3 new locations available any time that she called, the game could be more mysterious. It would keep the outsiders guessing. Molly got a lawyer so that, you know, she could make sure everything was on the up and up.
Right.
She brought in top criminal attorney Wendell Winkelstein.
That's a freaking brilliant name.
Oh.
I love that.
Yeah. She built relationships with the players and attempted to say yes to anything they wanted, unless it was illegal. She attempted to have everything at the games that could be requested. You know, the things they wanted most, like it was usually caviar, champagne, scotch, phone chargers, ew. You know. Yeah, I know.
All terrible choices, yeah. Aside from the phone chargers.
We'll just take a phone charger, please.
Fucking champagne? Oh.
You know, I'm not a champagne gal either.
I do not
and
like
everybody
it.
Just loves it.
No, I'll, like, take, like, a sparkling grape juice every once in a while.
Sure.
But, like, fucking champagne is
I
nasty.
I just don't get it. Yeah.
No. Give me tequila.
Any day. All the tequilas. On top of that, Molly began providing additional services to all the players. She would book them hotel rooms, make travel arrangements, call in acupuncturists. Hell, if someone needed a new designer purse purchased, Molly would deduct it from their wins and make it happen.
Fuck, it must be nice to have money.
I know. You're just like, hey, book me a hotel, get me this, get me that, go get me a purse. Cool, it's done.
I have to do all those things on my very own.
Right, and we would not be able to afford the purse.
No, nor would I want anything. To.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. I just, you know, carry around like a backpack purse and call it good.
There you go. She was making so much money from tips that she was able to take over the lease on her old boss Darren's S-Class Mercedes. It turned into a situation where the players began calling Molly anytime they needed something, and she always had to be available. Now, this would be fine, but the game was a secret. So even Molly could not talk about it. So she had to keep making up all these lame excuses about why she was constantly rushing off and taking calls.
Yeah, that would not be fine because once I'm off work, everybody leave me alone.
Well, if I was making this kind of money,
yeah, I suppose you're like, I'd be available. I'll jump to it.
Yeah, I would. The person who called the most was Toby Maguire. He was the one who originally insisted that they use his shuffle master in the game and, of course, pay him to use it. Now he had other ideas. He wanted to add new people to the group and increase the stakes. Molly's game had been operating with a $10,000 buy-in, but Toby wanted it to increase to $50,000.
That's a big jump.
Yeah.
That's not like a little one.
No.
That's a huge jump.
It's a lot of monies. They would definitely lose some players if they did that, so they needed to have replacements already set up. If the buy-in was higher, the tips would be higher.
Right. Yeah, she was probably like, let's go.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded crazy, but Molly was enjoying that power that she was getting from running the game, and she was ready to increase the stakes. They began looking for new people to join that could pay the $50,000 in cash. The only rule was no pros allowed. When Molly was working for Darren, she walked away with $3,000 on her first night. When she ran the game with a $50,000 buy-in, she walked away with close to $50,000 in tips, and the game was running twice a week.
Yeah. Stuff like that kind of just makes me want to put my head through a wall because I go to work and stress the hell out every day.
And could never get close to this.
Yeah.
Like, huh.
Yeah.
It's just crazy to even think about, honestly. Running a poker business is really a gray area. There are technically ways to run this while keeping things legal, but that doesn't mean that everybody's okay with walking such a fine line. One day, Molly went into her bank to deposit more cash, and they told her they found out about her poker business and she needed to close her account and empty her safety deposit box effective immediately.
Okay, what the fuck did they think she was doing?
Well, I think you have to wait for proof, though.
It's so much money being...
Yes. And, like, all this cash is coming through, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. Molly's attorney was not concerned about the incident, but she was. She had just been blacklisted from a bank, but she couldn't spend a lot of time worrying about it. She was taking her poker players to Vegas for the weekend. It was in Sin City that Toby Maguire made a deal with another player named Houston Curtis. Toby gave him money to cover his losses, and he said that for the next year, Toby would take 50% of Houston's wins and none of his losses. So Toby found a way to get paid for his shuffle master at every game. He was ultimately picking the poker players at the games. He was making money off Houston when he won, and Toby himself won most of the time at the games.
So what I'm hearing is that Toby Maguire is actually really freaking smart when it comes to making money and was just pulling it all in.
Essentially.
Okay.
Yeah. According to Molly, Toby was the worst tipper, the biggest winner, and the worst loser because he would complain and make everybody miserable when he was down.
Wait. A smaller tipper?
Yeah.
With how much he was pulling in?
Correct. However, I do want to say in the second book that I read, that was actually addressed. And Houston said, you know, Molly comes down on Toby for being a smaller tipper, but he was tipping large. Like $1,000 was the worst tipping he might have in a night. Right. So it's like on a totally different scale than what we can comprehend.
Yeah, I suppose. Because like when I'm at the bar, I'm like, oh, you made me a drink and now I have to tip you another $3 each time I get a drink. And I'm very salty about it.
I know.
But wow, I mean, that's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So $1,000 was him tipping on a bad night. And so maybe others in comparison are actually tipping, you know, quite a bit more. Wow. So I don't know if it's even fair to say that he's a bad tipper. So I just wanted to put that in there as well. After a game, he handed Molly a $1,000 chip and said that it could be hers, but she had to do something for him. He wanted her to get up on a desk and bark like a seal.
I'm barking.
Okay, honestly, when I read it, I was like, I'm gonna go for that too.
Yeah.
Like, I will bark like a seal for $1,000. Yes. However, according to Molly, he held the chip above her head and loudly announced that she needed to bark like a seal, and she refused. She was embarrassed, and all of the guys were staring at her.
Well, when you're pulling in that much, I suppose.
You don't have to. And she's trying to earn respect of all of these powerful Hollywood men. She had always said yes to all the players' demands, but this is where she drew the line. Besides, She didn't need $1,000. At this point, Molly drove a Bentley, split the cost of private jets, paid for tables at the club, hired a personal assistant and a chef, and she was living the high life.
God, I wish I could hire a chef.
Oh, that would be a dream.
That would be so nice.
Yeah. It was everything she had worked her ass off for, but she also noticed that she was acting colder and using the phrase, "It's just business." Maybe she was losing herself a little bit. One day, Molly received a call from a woman that said one of the players, Arthur, wanted to host the poker game at his house. Molly agreed and asked what time she should be there. She was told that, no, no, this is a paid vacation for you. She wasn't needed that night. Isn't that exactly how they had pushed Darren out earlier so that Molly could take over the game? Arthur was going to use Molly's table, poker players, dealer, and staff, but not her. This was bad, but what could she do? At 2 a.m., her phone rang, and Toby Maguire said, "You're fucked."
Okay, this took a turn.
He told Molly that Arthur decided he would have the game at his house every week. Some of the players called and apologized to Molly, but they explained, you know what? Arthur was a big fish. He had tons of money, and she couldn't compete with that. Each week after that, Molly would send out the poker invites, and she just kept receiving a bunch of no's because everybody was going to Arthur's. She tried to contact him, but he wouldn't return any calls, emails, or texts. So Molly decided she needed to quit feeling sorry for herself and get back out there. She called up a player who was involved in playing poker games in New York, and he was like, you know what? Actually, it's been a huge pain to organize everything. And he said they didn't play as often as he would actually like. That was her moment. Molly said, you know what? I got this. I can organize everything. She met up with the new group of guys, and they agreed to give her a trial run. From that point, Molly began flying to New York every Tuesday morning to host the game, stay up all night, and head to the airport the next day to fly back to LA, where she was running a smaller game once a week. While she had been devastated to be pushed out of her game in LA, she was now making double to triple the amount in New York. I know. Like, I can't understand.
I didn't know that this was what, like, I needed to do with my life.
It's not. Trust me. You'll find out.
I know it's going to take a weird, some sort of dark turn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
it has to.
Wowza. I just didn't know that. Wow.
I can't believe that I had never heard about this game prior.
I definitely never have either, so.
But there's actually a movie out about it. I didn't watch it, but yeah, it's called Molly's Game.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'm going to be Googling that tonight.
Yeah, and then I think I read that, like, Michael Cera plays Toby Maguire.
Yes!
It, like, wasn't confirmed which player he was supposed to be, but then he later admitted, like, yeah, it was Toby.
I just love Michael Cera.
I do, too. During a night out on the town, Molly realized that Arthur was never the one that took over the game and pushed her out. No, no. Somebody set her up. Molly ran into Arthur's assistant, and she explained that she overheard a conversation, and it was actually Toby Maguire.
I fucking knew it.
He's the one that wanted to kick Molly out, and he used Arthur to do it. She was determined to make sure that nobody stole the game from her ever again. But greed lurked around every corner. She began dating one of the poker players, who was a trader on Wall Street named Glenn. At first, he liked that Molly was so ambitious, but on one of his bad nights, he was down $200,000, and Molly had to leave the game to go check on another game that she was running the same night. This was not a good look, because he's sitting there like, okay, I'm down money, my girlfriend just left while I was down, she's not there, and also she wasn't there at the end to get everybody paid. It was just a really bad look for him in front of all of his friends. That night, Molly learned that her other game was in trouble because the books were off more than once. It was starting to look like somebody was cheating and stealing from her. Then she gets home to Glenn, and he announced that since Molly left the game, he was keeping all of her tips, and he wanted to be figured in retroactively to all the games that had been done at his house.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So the first thing on her list was to figure out how somebody was stealing from her. So she installed cameras and watched real close at the next game. A player named Willie was down, yet somehow he ended up winning and asking to be paid. When Molly watched the tapes, she saw that he was sneaking chips from his pocket at the table.
Huh. Classic.
Uh-huh. So she showed him the tapes and said if he paid his debts, then he could have the tape. And that's exactly what he did. Next, she broke up with her boyfriend, Glenn. The next day, she emailed a poker player about the next game. And he said, the game's already been set up. Like, what are you talking about? One of Glenn's good friends and Molly's biggest competition swooped in and stole her players for one night each week, and Molly's ex-boyfriend Glenn was now running games out of his house on a different night of the week.
Yeah, of course.
Right. So she would need to find a clever way to get the New York game back or pick a new spot and start all over again. After she lost everything, two men showed up to speak with her. They basically wanted to be hired to make sure that the poker players paid their debts on time. But she wasn't interested in running things that way. Like, Molly had always gone out and collected the money herself after the games, and it had been fine.
Well,
she had a few days to think things over because it was the holiday season. Molly flew home, and while she was unpacking, there was a knock. She opened her apartment door, and a man forced his way inside, pointed a gun at her, and slammed her head against the wall. The man forced her into the bedroom, and she told him she had money in the safe. He grabbed her by the hair and smashed her head into the wall, demanding to know where the safe was. Molly told him the safe was in the closet, and suddenly, she realized the guy wasn't wearing a mask. He was going to kill her. With a gun to her head, she opened the safe where there was $10,000 in cash and some jewelry. He put everything in one of Molly's bags, then whispered in her ear, "You still think you can call the shots, you little fucking cunt?" She was confused and asked what this meant. The man said, "This is your fault. If you weren't such a bitch to my friends, I wouldn't have to do what I have to do." The man repeatedly punched her in the face. Blood was gushing, and Molly was choking on her blood. She knew that this had something to do with the two men that had wanted her to hire them. She scrambled into the closet trying to hide, but the man pulled her back out. She begged him to stop. She said she had family and asked him not to kill her. He told her that it didn't have to be this way. They could have had a good relationship, and he said, "Just don't disrespect us ever again." He warned Molly that she could not go to the police because they knew where her mom lived. He punched her again and she blacked out. She couldn't go to anyone. She was alone, and this was the beginning of the downward spiral. Molly received a subpoena in the mail. One of the poker players, Brad Rutterman, had been indicted by the federal government. Allegedly, his fund had been a Ponzi scheme. Most of the investors in his fund were family and friends, and he was not registered with the SEC. At the time of his arrest, he only had $60,000 in his fund, which was extremely different from the $45 million that he reported to his investors.
Yeah.
Little sure different is. There, huh? Brad had talked about the poker game, so the prosecutor wanted Molly's deposition. Brad was claiming that Molly lured him into the games, and he developed a gambling addiction, which led him to lose sight of his morals and take money from people for his fun.
Oh.
So it was all Molly's fault.
It was his fault. It was right. All hers.
Yes.
Okay.
It was uncomfortable, but she danced around every question and didn't give specific facts about the game. Once that was done, she jumped right back into the scene and rebuilt her game better than ever. She allegedly had some of the biggest gamblers in the world coming to her next game. As she was getting ready in the hotel, the phone rang. It was a blocked number. A muffled voice on the other end told her not to do the game. She asked who was calling, and the line went dead. Since her attack, Molly began changing the location of her games regularly, and she hired security guards. So she brushed off the warning. It was probably just a competitor that was trying to rattle her. As she headed to the poker room, she received a text from one of the players. The FBI is here, 20 or so. They're looking for you.
Oh, shit.
Right?
That is not a text you want to get.
Never. Never, never. She quickly booked it out of there and left the state. She went home to her family and finally told them everything she had been holding in for the past few years. Molly's attorney said he could help, but there was going to be an extra fee. She logged into her bank account and it had a negative balance. She called her bank and they awkwardly told her, there's a note on your account to contact the United States District Attorney's Office. Her assets had been seized by the government.
Rough.
Yeah. Her lawyer said the government wanted her to come talk to them about organized crime, and she said, no.
No, like, thank you.
No, I do not want to do that. Instead, she went home, sold her poker table, gave up her apartment, and paid movers to pack everything and store it in Queens. She moved home to Colorado with her family and focused on a more peaceful life. 6 months after the feds raided Molly's game, there were players who were arrested for allegedly running a huge scam. They had defrauded the insurance companies out of $600 million, and that's most likely why the feds got involved. She could not rebuild the game any longer because now it wasn't a secret. Due to Brad Rutterman's indictment, the word had spread around the poker community. There had been a subsequent lawsuit where every player who took a check from Brad in the poker game was getting sued, and that exposed the game, the players, and of course, the woman who ran the whole operation.
Holy hell.
Yeah.
This is a tangled web.
It's all coming down. They began calling Molly the poker princess and the madam of poker. Paparazzi showed up at Molly's parents' house and her high school and started calling her friends. One day, Molly's phone rang at 5 a.m. The caller was Jeremy Wesson from the FBI, and he said they were outside of her apartment. She had 20 seconds to get out or they were breaking the door down. She was cuffed and placed in a dark SUV. Molly asked where they were going, and the FBI agents said, downtown.
No, thank you.
Yeah, this is a hard no. They pulled into a dark basement parking garage, and one of the men grabbed their radio and said, are you ready for the prisoner? The reply back was, yes.
No, thank you.
Like, this is a horror film right here. They took Molly's photo and fingerprints. Then she was told to stand and face the wall, and they placed a large chain belt around her waist, and she was handcuffed to the chain belt and led into a cell. Molly's lawyer showed up and handed her the indictment, which detailed the alleged criminal conspiracy. There were 34 defendants, and some of them had been players in Molly's game. Vor, I believe that's how you say the name. I don't know. Vor, a Russian organized crime boss, who was one of the 10 most wanted fugitives in the world. Helly, the wealthy playboy. John Hansen, the chess master. Pete, the plumber, who gambled away part of his plumbing business. And Eugene, his brother, and their father, who were allegedly running a $100 million bookmaking operation out of the Trump Tower apartment where Molly had spent many nights.
Where did Pete the plumber come in?
Let me tell you what. There's so many things happening.
It was just like all these super intense people and then Pete the plumber.
Pete the plumber. And also, the bookmaking that was happening in the Trump Tower apartment. Bookmaking is betting on sports or events.
Yeah.
So Molly was eventually released on $100,000 bail and ordered to appear in New York City before the federal judge of the Southern District of the city to enter a plea. She was facing 5 to 10 years and she pleaded not guilty. She chose not to fight the indictment because it would have cost millions of dollars. She also declined to work with the government. On December 12, 2013, Molly Bloom accepted the charges and became a convicted felon. Molly had been asked if she would ever do this all over again. Like, if you could go back, would you do it again? Would she choose the same path? What do you think she said, Hannah?
I'd like to think that she said no, but why do I feel like she said yes?
She said yes.
Holy shit.
She had a great adventure, learned to believe in herself, and she said she was brave. Like I said earlier, the story was also told by another person that was involved in this. One of the poker players, Houston Curtis, wrote a book from his point of view. He explained that a lot of people play cards at home, and that's not illegal. What made things different in this situation was the fact that they had Molly Bloom, and she was performing a function that wasn't typical for a home poker game. There were people that declined invitations to play in the game specifically because of the role that Molly played. They had concerns about the legalities. Things turned bad in 2009 when the FBI investigation into the world of the A-list gambling club began. Brad Ruderman had confessed to bilking investors out of $25 million in a Ponzi scheme and using $5.2 million of that money to settle his poker debts. He was sentenced to 10 years in jail for 2 counts of wire fraud and 2 counts of investment advisor fraud, and ordered to repay his investors, but of course, he was not able to do that. Investors in his hedge fund, whose money Brad Ruderman had used to pay his poker debts, realized that if the games were unlicensed and illegal, that meant any transaction from the game was void. The interesting thing here is for the longest time, the poker players used Brad Ruderman. So they would bring him into the game specifically for the sole reason of taking his money. They buried him every week and they took millions from him. But in the end, he was their biggest downfall. When the lid was blown off the story, all of the players settled except for Houston Curtis. He lost his $3 million home after a $750,000 lien was put on it due to the scandal. The 22 people who sued to get their money back that had been used in the scandal to pay gambling debts received more than $1.7 million.
There's so much money involved in this.
I know.
Holy hell.
It's so crazy. So according to Houston Curtis, Molly's version of the story isn't quite correct, and he certainly didn't believe that she should be portrayed as the mastermind behind the whole poker game. Houston says that it was actually himself and Toby Maguire who really orchestrated everything, and it was a hustle from the beginning. The game didn't even start at the Viper Room, which is where Molly's book says it began. But Houston says it really started when he and Toby Maguire played High Stakes Hold'em in January of 2004. This was the night they first met each other, and they hit it off. The two of them decided to start a poker game at Toby's house. The game was held in Toby's kitchen each week, and his chef would cook vegan food for them because Toby was vegan. If the others ordered pizzas with non-vegan ingredients, I guess he would make faces at them and he would get, like, visibly upset. One evening when someone brought meat into his house, he said he was sick of all the scumbag poker players. This was one of the main reasons the game eventually had to move, and that's when they decided to go to the Viper Room. According to the book, he also had an issue with germs. Toby made all the players take their shoes off when they entered his house, and then they had to slip on a pair of Crocs. He was also sober, which is fine. He was okay with other people drinking, but sometimes it can kind of change the vibe when the host isn't drinking and everybody else playing the game wanted to.
That's true.
Like, it just can make it different. You know, so now they can't eat meat, they can't track germs into the house, and they can't drink too much. A woman was the dealer at these games, and that's where Toby Maguire came up with the idea that everybody had to tip Jen if they wanted to be invited back. Things were going well until one of the players lost too much money. Toby knew that he didn't actually have the money to cover the losses each week, so they decided to stop inviting this person to the game, and allegedly, according to the book, this person ended up ending their own life.
Allegedly.
Yeah. This was the moment that the poker players realized they needed to be more detached from the situation. Like, they probably shouldn't have the game at their houses because then they were more liable for situations.
Right.
Toby was the one that suggested that they should move to the Viper Room, where they were really good friends with Darren Feinstein, who was now in charge. In Molly's book, she said that her boss, Darren, was the one that came up with the idea of the poker game, but it kind of sounds like the idea might have been brought to him, like it was already in the works. So in Molly's book, she thought she was the mastermind behind the game, but in Houston's book, he and Toby were the masterminds. So, I mean, that's up to everyone else to decide because I don't know. I have suspicions.
Yeah. It is intriguing, though, like the different sides of this.
Yes. And I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that Molly worked her ass off and did a lot for that game.
I just had no idea that Spider-Man was so involved in this stuff.
I know.
Wow.
Well, Curtis and Toby strategized to make sure the game would be successful at the Viper Room. They would invite players with deep pockets and make sure that celebrities were there to lure people in. They needed Molly to be brought in to send the invitations each week. That way, she could send a confirmation to Toby, which she did discuss in her book. The whole goal was never to just play poker. The goal was for Curtis and Toby to win each week and empty people's pockets. So, like he said, it was a hustle from the beginning. Toby wanted Leonardo DiCaprio to play, but he said the only way he would be involved is if they stake him, meaning they had to cover the cost. And you might be a little shocked because you're like, Leo obviously has enough money to be covering himself in these games, but clearly that kind of tells me that he knew what they were up to.
Right. I was going to say that Tiles tells me that he's just a little bit more smart with his money instead of just whipping it out there constantly.
Yeah, and so he's like, you know what? If they're going to use me to lure others in, then the very least they could do is cover the cost, right?
I mean, yeah.
So if Leonardo lost, Toby and Houston had to cover it. If he won, he got to keep 50%.
That's a pretty good deal, I'm not going to lie.
I mean, I'd play. That sounds fun.
I mean, and it would get me if I knew he was going to be there. I'd be like, well, shit, I'll play.
I'm in.
I'm just, yeah.
Let me sell everything I own for this one night.
Right.
They ran the game at the Viper Room until a friend, Andy Bellin, asked if they could have the game at his house. Andy let them know that Molly felt like her boss was trying to push her out, and she was getting worried. That's when Toby realized he could use that fear to his advantage and control Molly more. Toby told Molly that she needed to step up, take more responsibility for the game. He wanted her to take charge of the bank, find a variety of five-star hotels to host the games, find new fish, and raise the buy-in to $50,000. Molly's book never mentioned Cody Leibel, but Houston's book did. Houston said that Cody was eccentric and he disappeared for about 30 minutes during a game. And when he came back, he said he had been with two women, you know?
Okay.
And apparently snorting blow off their boobs. Which,
I mean, listen, he wanted to have a good night.
I don't even know what to do with this information, but okay. And again, in case you're lost with all of these names, we had discussed Blake Leibel in our last episode, and Cody was his brother. So allegedly, Molly Bloom was the one that arranged the suite, the sex workers, and the drugs. So that's basically what Houston is getting at here. Houston does agree with Molly's version of events that Tobey Maguire asked her to bark like a seal one night.
Okay, so that's what they agree on?
Yes.
Okay.
That is the thing that they both say, yes, that happened. He admits that this was crossing the line, but he said that he did give her $1,000, even though she refused to do it. At this point, Molly was taking home $30,000 a night, and I guess Toby was over it. He was fed up with the way that things were going, and he wanted to force Molly to find bigger fish for them or start capping her tips. Like, he just didn't think it was fair that she was taking home so much each time. Houston and Toby had been running things, but now they were finding out that Molly was doing things behind their backs that they had not authorized. Instead of capping her tips, Houston claims that Molly took money from the dealer, and I guess they had hired a masseuse, and she was taking money from them as well.
They had a freaking masseuse?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Dude, they had everything at these games. Houston said he was pissed when he found out about this information, but once he found Molly doing drugs and getting involved in some pretty dark things, he felt that they needed to cut her loose because they had a reputation to protect. There was a power struggle between Toby and Molly that was changing the vibe of the game week after week, but nobody was ready to really do anything about it. It was just kind of lingering. On Houston's wife's birthday, instead of celebrating the day with her, he played poker and lost $1,000,000.
Happy birthday!
I don't want that. He knew he was in deep this time. So this is where he offered Tobey Maguire a deal. If Toby loaned him the $1,000,000 to pay off the debt, he would pay him back 50% of his wins until it was paid off, and then free roll him on 10% of his wins for another year, and no exposure on losses. Toby declined and said he would give him $600,000. Houston had to pay back 50% of his wins until it was paid off. Then he wanted 50% of his wins for another year, no exposure on losses. Houston was desperate, and he had to get that $1,000,000 paid off, so he took the deal. I mean, I will say, it's amazing that Toby was willing to loan him that kind of money, because even though he has a lot, it doesn't mean he has to do something like that.
That's true.
But the terms suck ass.
Right.
He's getting back way more than the $600,000. So, like, this isn't fair.
But everything he does seems to be a way for him to pull in more.
Mm-hmm. It only took Houston 3 weeks to win the money back that he needed to pay Toby.
Wow.
So that now meant he was on the hook for the entire rest of the year to pay him 50% of his wins.
No.
Yeah. Toby Maguire usually won every night because he handpicked the players and set things up in his favor. Now he would get 50% of Houston's wins every night, and he was finally ready to get rid of Molly Bloom. You might think that Houston Curtis should have stopped playing the game for the year, because that's what I thought. I was like, okay, you paid him off in 3 weeks. Like, let's just pump the brakes for a little bit. However, he couldn't do that. He explained in his book that if he stopped playing the game, then he wouldn't be invited back. Someone else was going to fill his spot, and he couldn't let that happen. So, I mean, he was stuck, and Toby knew that. In Molly's version of events, Toby just cut her loose from the game, but Houston said that he actually recommended her to somebody else. That way, she would leave their game, and they could get rid of her without making it look like that's what they were doing. So they were the ones who supposedly arranged for her to go to New York, and she accepted the job. In Molly's book, she painted a picture of a very cutthroat industry where everybody was stealing the game from her and just shoving her out. It was nearing the end for everyone involved when Brad Ruderman got himself in deep and had been arrested. The feds raided his office and found out that his $50 million hedge fund had about $500,000 left. Now, I know that that's a little different from the amounts that Molly had in her book, but I mean, it's somewhere in there. Everyone that had ever received a check from Brad was being looked at. Molly Bloom said that Brad Ruderman was the one that blew up the game and confirmed the names of everyone involved, but Houston Curtis says it was Molly. He said that Brad would not have ever known all the names of the people that he owed money to, because the way it worked is if you had a loss, you give the money to Molly and Molly pays out the other people. So she would have settled his debts. Houston Curtis had received many checks from Brad Ruderman, so he was on the hook in a big way. The feds took almost everything. His water and power were shut off, and he started receiving foreclosure notices. Then he woke up drenched in sweat one night, and when he went to the hospital, the doctors said he had an enlarged heart. They found a few spots that needed to be checked, so they took him for a biopsy, and then he woke up in the ICU. During the biopsy, he went into cardiac arrest due to heart failure. He was diagnosed with cardiomyopathy. Houston could see what this was doing to his wife and children, and he realized he needed to get his life straightened out. Like, this had to be rock bottom. Or so he thought. After he got out of the hospital, his mother-in-law died, and he needed money to get to Boston for the funeral. So he had to reach out to an old poker friend to borrow money. His friend Nick said, yeah, he could give him money to get to the funeral and get enough to get his power turned back on. But in return, he was going to rent his house out to vacationers while he was in Boston. Houston agreed to Nick's deal. After the funeral, and I only put that in there, like the deal part, because it's like so interesting for these poker players that every single thing they seem to do works in a deal, you know?
That's true, it does.
And I'm sure, I guess that's just part of their nature, you know? After the funeral, Houston decided it would be best if his wife stayed in Boston longer so she could take care of her father, and then the kids were going to stay there too. Houston flew back to California. One day, while he was on his balcony, someone shouted his name and a gun was pointed at him. It was a detective with the LAPD, and they had him surrounded. They had a warrant for his arrest, but it was for a dispute that happened at a casino in Vegas. He had slowly been paying it off, but the casino turned it over to the DA, and they issued a warrant. He had once been on top of the world, living the high life. Now, he was on his way to the LA County Jail.
Okay, I feel like that's kind of a pattern here with them all, though.
Yes.
It's like they're there, they're at the top,
and then it crashes.
They just, boom, yeah.
Everything explodes. And that's kind of why I wanted to do both perspectives here, is because the stories are slightly different, but really, they're the same.
Same result, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's on his way to the LA County Jail, and he had not taken his heart medication. And during his first day in jail, he passed out and woke up in the hospital. Once he finally spoke to his attorney, he was told that Nevada wanted $80,000 just to release him, Otherwise, they were shipping him to Vegas in a month. Unfortunately, Houston was in a bad situation in the prison he was in, and he did not think he would be alive in a month if he stayed. He started calling up his old loan shark buddies and cut a deal. He was released 2 weeks later, and Nevada still had a warrant for his arrest, but it was no longer nationwide. He didn't have a house anymore to go home to. Everything had been repossessed to cover debts or to be sold for attorney fees. The IRS got in on the action as well. They audited Houston for his 2006 tax return, and they decided to disallow all of his losses as a professional gambler, but they accepted his wins.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay. Then he was sued by three different companies. He couldn't fight any of it, and he couldn't afford to file for bankruptcy. So he ends the book with the big question everyone has. Would he change anything?
Oh my God.
What do you think?
If he says no, I'll like... that's my guess.
Okay.
He's not going to change anything.
Before I launch into the answer, I want to give you a definition of a card sharp, and that's sharp with a P. This can also be a card shark, but a card sharp...
Oh, sorry. I was sitting here like, what the hell else would it be, a card shark? That makes more sense.
A shirt.
That I was like, why did you have to say it with like a P? I was happening?
No. A card sharp is a person who uses skill or deception to win poker or other card games. So it's someone who cheats at cards to win money. So was it worth it, Houston? He says that he lost his house, his cars. He was audited by the IRS. He went broke, got sued by multiple people, lost $1 million in one single night, got rat-fucked by Brad Rutterman, went to jail, died on the table, and had to be revived and lost everything he owned. But was it worth it? He ends the book by saying, quote, "For as long as I can remember, I knew I wanted to be a card sharp. What do you think?" And that's the end.
Are you kidding me?
No.
So,
it's basically like the ending of Inception.
Okay, well.
Where, like, you know the answer, but it's not given to you.
Yeah, I guess that was fitting that I mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, man, that was super interesting.
I still cannot believe, with all of these people involved, that I never heard of this game before. No,
me either.
It's very wild.
I mean, granted, it's more surprising for you because, like, you remember stuff.
Yeah.
But still.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, when I went through the books, I will say that, you know, Houston says that Tobey Maguire was basically the mastermind. And I think that when I went through Molly's version of events, most of the things she was saying kind of
made it sound like he was.
Yeah, because, yeah, you know, she's like, oh, he had to have a text to know exactly who's playing in every game. We're using his Shuffle Master. He wants to raise the stakes. It's like, Toby's kind of behind everything.
No, I agree.
Allegedly. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. So, I don't know, just a really interesting and different type of story.
No, I liked that. Like, a lot.
Cool. Yeah, I thought it was very, very wild.
And I definitely would not be against, like, if you happen to come across anything else like that, because that was very interesting.
Well, hey, it could happen. You never know.
Okay.
All right. So make sure to follow us on any of your podcast apps. Tell us the stories you want to hear. Like us on Facebook, X, Instagram. Leave us a 5-star review if you love us. Tell your friends. Tell your cats. Bye.